Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Wednesday. It is January 13th, and good to be with you on a Wednesday and every day in this new year that God has given us, 2021. Thank you, Jesus, and thank you for listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Looking forward to chatting with someone we know and love from the Register and EWTN, Monsignor Charles Pope. He is a wonderful, wonderful man of God and such a great homilist and teacher. He's written some really great stuff for the Register, recently writing about his own challenges with COVID-19, and I thought it was an excellent piece that he did. It's actually one of two. We're going to talk about the first one today. I'm not sure if the second one has been posted yet, but he's talking about the very sad response to those who are raising questions about the way COVID is being handled in terms of the extreme lockdowns, the arbitrary rules, so many issues, so many segments of society being greatly impacted negatively by the lockdowns. There was a really good story that I posted last week about the segment of society dealing with addictions and how they've been so negatively affected by the lockdowns. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on as a result of these extreme lockdowns in various places. Of course, the economy is being affected. Businesses are closing, and not just temporarily. So what Monsignor is saying is, look, nobody's saying this is not an illness or a virus. He had it, and he struggled with it, and he is one of those who are vulnerable because of a condition he has. He was hospitalized for it, so he's not sitting there and saying it's not a disease and that he doesn't care about people with coronavirus. But what happens is, and this has happened to me, whenever you bring up questions about the way this is being handled when you're locking down segments of society that are healthy, and the result of that, you are then all of a sudden demonized, as Monsignor says in his column, and you are said that you do not care about these people. You're heartless. Well, that's not what we're saying. We're simply saying we have to look at the big picture, and is this the best way a year into this thing, and with all the damage that has been done, is this the way to handle it? So Monsignor raises those questions. And again, this is someone who's had the illness and who's in the vulnerable category. So we'll talk with him about that at 15 minutes past the hour. Then lots of news from Rome. The Holy Father had his audience today. And then also he issued some new guidelines on how to distribute ashes for Ash Wednesday and the start of Lent. Also more on that motu proprio regarding women as acolytes and lectors and what it means. Joan Lewis has written on that. And much more to discuss as well with our dear sister Joan Lewis on a Wednesday. Do want to remind you to, if you can, or if you're thinking about it, a lot of people are writing me and are very overwhelmed and feeling very distraught. As Joseph Pierce said on Monday, do not give in to this despair. And as Al was talking, I think it was last Friday in his monologue for the opening of the show, Al Crest on Crest in the Afternoon was talking about Joshua and remembering the things the Lord has done and to focus on your mission. And one of the things that we did with my book, Listening for God, is help people do just that. I think you'll find it to be a real shot in the arm because you can pick up these stories and you can read about how people are telling, and people from all walks of life in this book, people are telling you what God has done for them and what he's doing, reminding you what he's doing for you as well. So anyway, just throwing it out there. I did an interview with Doug Keck for Bookmark when I was down in December for the Catholic View for Women, and the lovely Jeanette Williams is going to have me on Women of Grace again. I'm so excited, so honored, in February to talk more about the book, and we'll do two shows on that. But Listening for God, you can find it at the EWTN Religious Catalog at our homepage on AveMariaRadio.net. And also at teresatomeo.com/listeningforgod. It's on sale. And I never met a sale I didn't like. So check it out. All right. Lots of news to get through this morning. So let's do that right now on a Wednesday. It's January 13th, 2021. And you are listening to EWTN. Well, the Supreme Court handing the president a pro-life victory, affirming the need to require abortion pills be obtained in person. The longstanding rule saying the abortion pill can only be acquired at approved health care facilities and not through the mail or delivery, the high court ruling in favor of the Trump administration in a 6-3 vote. In her State of the State address Tuesday, South Dakota's Governor Kristi Noem saying she will ask her legislature to ban abortions that are sought on the basis of a prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome.
For those who have had the privilege of knowing someone with Down syndrome, you know that that person ends up being a gift to all of us. So I share this today because even in 2021, in some European countries like Iceland and Denmark, they're on pace to virtually eliminate children with Down syndrome. They do this one way and through one way only, through abortion. As actress Patricia Heaton points out, Iceland is simply killing everyone that has it. Now, as South Dakotans, and frankly, as human beings, we should all be appalled by this. We are better than that. The Declaration of Independence summarizes what we all know in our hearts to be true, that God created each of us and endowed all of us with the right to life. This is true for everyone, including those with an extra chromosome. So I look forward to the day. I look forward to the day when the Supreme Court recognizes that all preborn children inherently possess the right to life, too.
Prior to her address, Noem appearing on Fox and Friends with Fox News contributor Rachel Campos Duffy and her husband, former Wisconsin Congressman Sean Duffy, and their daughter Valentina, who has Down syndrome. Recent reports of The Atlantic and CBS News finding nearly 100% of unborn babies who test positive for Down syndrome are aborted in Iceland, 95% in Denmark, and 77% in France. A lawsuit filed yesterday against the state of New York over its 2019 law legalizing some abortions through pregnancy. Among the plaintiffs, victims of domestic violence alleging that New York's Reproductive Health Act helped enable domestic abuse by removing penalties to the death of unborn children resulting from that abuse. And women represented by attorneys serving as special counsel to Women's Alliance Against Violence, a new initiative of the Thomas More Society to challenge laws that enable violence against women and children. The Reproductive Health Act, enacted back in 2019, legalized abortion in some cases up until the point of birth, also excluding unborn babies from the definition of persons with legal rights, and removed protections for babies who could survive abortion attempts. Furthermore, that lawsuit saying the law puts pregnant women in greater danger from domestic abusers by removing legal rights of unborn children, effectively removing criminal penalties for domestic abuse that results in the death of a child. Pope Francis, as we mentioned earlier, Joan Lewis will be addressing more on this a little bit later on in the program, releasing his message for the next World Day of the Sick. The day was instituted by Pope St. John Paul II back in 1992, and as Vatican News' Robin Gnomes explains, the Holy Father this year is calling for healing that is grounded in trust and interpersonal relationships between the sick and those who care for them.
The theme of this year's World Day of the Sick is, "You have but one teacher, and you are all brothers," a theme that calls for a trust-based relationship to guide care for the sick. According to Pope Francis, a society is all the more human to the degree that it cares effectively for its most frail and suffering members in a spirit of fraternal love. As a way to fight hypocrisy and self-idolatry, Jesus asked us to stop and listen, to establish a direct and personal relationship with others, to feel empathy and compassion, and to let their suffering become our own as we seek to serve them, the Pope says in his message for the 29th World Day of the Sick. The Pope warns Christians about the danger of self-idolatry when our faith is reduced to empty words and we are unconcerned with the lives and needs of others. The current pandemic, the Pope notes, has exacerbated inequalities in our healthcare systems and exposed inefficiencies in the care of the sick, with the elderly, weak, and vulnerable people not always granted access to care or in an equitable manner.
Former Congressman and presidential candidate Ron Paul saying he's been blocked now from using Facebook. He said he was given no warning and was not told exactly how he violated their standards.
And I thought, why would they do that? I follow a policy and a philosophy of nonviolence and peace. You're dangerous. You may be supporting terrorism.
Paul says he learned a valuable lesson in his long political career that he tries to voice every day.
I've been taught and I've come to understand that sometimes if you tell the truth, it is a threat to people. They just don't want to hear it.
His most recent post linked to an article he wrote denouncing censorship on social media. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York has called on the administration to place those inside the Capitol during last week's riots on the no-fly list, claiming that some desired to return to Washington or commit violence elsewhere. He said, "We're concerned about these people getting back on airplanes." He added that the insurrectionists, as he called them, who breached the Capitol fall under the definition of threats to the homeland and should be immediately added to the TSA no-fly list. Meanwhile, neither TSA nor the FBI said directly what they would do regarding his demands. In a statement yesterday, TSA did say it was beefing up law enforcement's presence at three major airports in the D.C. area, the agency clarifying it was screening travelers and that those on no-fly lists would not receive boarding passes. An FBI statement provided to Fox News, for example, reading, "If an individual is deemed to be an immediate threat to other airline passengers or to the aircraft, the agencies and local law enforcement at the airport have the jurisdiction to detain or arrest the individual, which would effectively prevent them from flying." President Trump has now also been pulled off of YouTube, the video platform, saying yesterday it's suspending his channel for the next week after accusing him of violating their policies on quote-unquote inciting violence. YouTube saying the president's suspension could last longer than 7 days, refusing to provide details regarding which video they claim led to that decision. This comes after Twitter banned the president from using their platform, as well as Facebook suspended him indefinitely. GoFundMe removing several fundraisers in the wake of last week's incidents at the Capitol. Users can no longer raise money to cover travel expenses to political events that they claim could turn violent. The crowdfunding website says it removed nearly 1,400 pages in the months leading up to the incident last week. Other companies are also following suit. Twitter suspending thousands of accounts, Facebook removing posts, and Airbnb also banning some guests. The head of the Salt Lake City chapter of the Proud Boys is advising Patriot organizations to avoid any protests at their state capitol over the next week. The chief of the chapter saying yesterday he's reminding members that violence is not acceptable and organizations like his need to realize there could be consequences.
Recognize what happened in Washington, D.C. Recognize the fact that there is full prosecution in front of any and all Patriots that do disregard the law.
The Utah Department of Public Safety increasing security at the state capitol after warnings from the FBI about possible violent protesters ahead of the inauguration next week. In Michigan, Flint residents reacting to the news that the former governor, Rick Snyder, and roughly eight others are now being charged in connection with the Flint water crisis. Tony Palladino says he can't rent his four homes any longer and fears the former governor will only get a slap on the wrist.
This neighborhood alone, there's been four deaths to brain aneurysms. Cancer is just rampant.
He says they're mentally drained after 7 years without much financial compensation from the state. And fewer Americans are able to cover unexpected expenses this year. A new report from Bankrate.com showing just 39% will be able to use their savings to cover a $1,000 cost, down from 41% in 2020. The survey also showing 38% would need to get a credit card or borrow from loved ones to pay for surprise costs. As for age, only a third of millennials will be able to take care of emergency costs. That's compared to 46% of Gen Xers and 45% of baby boomers. Almost 14 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back on a Wednesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Looking forward to speaking with our dear friend, Monsignor Charles Pope. Stay tuned.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. Your search for affordable health care stops here. Since 2014, CMF Curo has provided Catholics with affordable health care sharing that goes beyond insurance. With programs that cost less than many COBRA and ACA-sponsored plans, CMF Curo is a Catholic health sharing experience that enables you to live fully alive while saving money. Call 1-833-GET-CURO to find affordable Catholic health care now. That's 1-833-GETCURO.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
We just did our parish mission a couple weeks ago now. And I suggested that in the course of the mission that we do something like a little mini spiritual assessment of our lives. I don't have to show this to anybody, but a great chance for us just to, with real honesty, just between us and Jesus, ask ourselves some questions. First question, given the fact that half of Catholics don't think God is even personal, would be to ask ourselves that. Do I think God is personal? And then to ask myself, do I think a relationship with Jesus is possible? Do I have a relationship with Jesus? And if so, what's it look like? And then perhaps a little bit more awkwardly or painfully, to ask Jesus, from his perspective, what's the friendship that we have with him look like? How would he describe our friendship with him? That might be a hard conversation to have.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. We're having a good day. Catching up with Monsignor Charles Pope from National Catholic Register and in the Washington, D.C. area. Just got back from giving a wonderful retreat to a number of our bishops. And Monsignor, you've been doing a really good job of addressing the problem that we have in the country, where a lot of people take offense to the fact when you raise questions about how the COVID is being handled in terms of, you know, how do we put a cap on it? How do we prevent it from being spread? And you, this is very near and dear to your heart, because you had COVID and you are already in that vulnerable category. And you wrote your first blog talking about five truths, and you have another edition on that today. And it's interesting, because you said something that I've been noticing, is that those who raise questions about the populations that are being very detrimentally affected by the lockdowns and some of these arbitrary rules and regulations, you're demonized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. I have to say, yeah, I mean, they just come back with a personal attack, you know, saying, you know, you don't care that people are dying. And I'm like, I do care, but I also care for people who are dying in different ways, losing their restaurants, their businesses, losing their livelihoods. Not everybody just has the check keep coming. Not everybody can virtually work. And, you know, as serious as COVID is, because I nearly died from it, mm-hmm. but it's treatable, and B, less than 1% actually do, the numbers shock us a bit, you know, close to 300,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, what about the lives of people who, you know, who've been completely shut down now for almost 9 months? But they say, well, you just don't care that people are dying. Away with you. Cancel culture. You're canceled. And I say that I have not yet been banned from Facebook, but I'm probably on their watch list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is so sad. I've never been so worried about our country and free speech and just the exchange of ideas that makes for, I don't know, what do you call it, a proper solution, where people mm-hmm. exchange ideas.
It's not happening any longer. I mean, I just went through a whole series of stories in my newscast about the latest attempts to silence people with whom the left disagrees, and it's not just the current mm-hmm. president of the United States. And I posted an article a few weeks ago on my Facebook page that I thought was very good, and it looked specifically at lockdown measures, how catastrophic they are for those who are recovering addicts as well as those with mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And those who work in these different facilities that can't have people coming anymore for their support groups and whatnot are saying depression has skyrocketed since the lockdowns began. Recovering addicts are struggling even now, due to boredom, inability to see family and friends, and a lack of social activities.
Right.
And the article further on in interviews medical doctors, and other doctors are saying, well, wait a minute, aren't we supposed to care about all people? Obviously, we care about the people with COVID and the situation, but what about everyone else that's affected by it?
Yeah. Well, to heck with them, because the media says they don't matter as much. You know what I mean? And they, as I say, media, it's not just that anymore. It's politicians, but it's also, we're going back to oligarchy, which means basically these highfalutin businessmen who run places like Twitter and Amazon, and they're just starting to, you know, to tell us you can't say this, you can't do that. And I'm utterly shocked at it. Even Walmart's piling on, and there is we're in real trouble with free speech and with the exchange of ideas, and just the simple fact that we can have a vigorous debate and not simply be demonized or left behind.
Now, did this come up at all? I'm curious with the bishops, because they have to be concerned about it as well.
Yes, we certainly did discuss it, and I can't really elaborate because but I will just say that, yeah, I mean, the bishops I was with from the Midwest are very concerned too, because obviously religious liberty is at the top of our list, but it isn't even just religious liberty anymore. I'm telling you right now, they are coming for you mm-hmm. if you don't toe the line.
How do you see that developing? I mean, in addition to, obviously, the commentary online and being demonized for this, that, and the other thing, including mm-hmm. Comments on COVID, how do you see that happening?
Well, first of all, there's always what we might call the first stage is always going to be, you know, ridicule. Oh, this, and there they go again, that those foolish, you know, people, the flyover people from flyover country. But then comes the marginalization. You are going to have your account suspended. You know, you'll be marginalized. Parler, I mean, that's astonishing to me that an entire platform could just be canceled within 20 or 36 hours. Boom, it was gone. But then comes the next stage, and you watch out for it. Criminalization
mm-hmm.
is coming.
Mm-hmm.
They will not tolerate dissent. And I don't want to be too gloom and doom, but I'm just telling you, this is not something new in human history. These patterns set up. Maybe I should republish my article on the stages of persecution. But yeah, you ridicule, then you marginalize, and then you criminalize.
So how do we stand up to this from a Catholic perspective?
Well, here's some good news. We have gone to the courts and often won. When governors were just, you know, treating us differently than any other, you know, you can't have but 10 people in your church. Well, then why can 50 people go into, you know, Sam's Club? And so we're winning those cases. So I think, first of all, we fight. And but there's going to come a point, and I don't know. Morally, we have to be very careful. But I don't want to simply utterly resist civil authority. Because there's a long tradition in the scriptures that says that we should, you know, generally speaking, the general norm is, to respect lawful authority. But there's going to come a time when we're going to have to finally say, we just simply will resist you. We will not comply.
Have you seen the movie, The Hidden Life, A Hidden Life?
I can't say I have, no.
Yeah, it came out last year. It's beautifully done. It's about a devout Catholic in Austria during World War II who is asked to, obviously, join the Nazis, and he refuses. He goes for the training, and then he comes back, and they try to get him to join up. He says no, and they said, okay, well, you can work in a hospital. You can work, you know, for the Nazis, and you don't have to go to war as long as you basically make your pledge to Hitler, and he refuses, and he eventually dies. But the whole story is about, and it's so, I mean, if you look at what's happening in our culture now in terms of the way the townspeople treated him, in terms of the way he was ostracized, oh, why don't you just go along? And it's just very, I think, eye-opening. And you don't want to be an alarmist, but we want people to be aware of how our free speech is really under attack. And I don't know, I guess I knew it would happen quickly. I just didn't think it would happen at such breakneck speed. I mean, what we've seen, Monsignor, in the last 3 or 4 days is nothing short of shocking.
Yeah. You know, I can only just repeat what you just said, shocking. And I don't even know where it will end, but it's going so fast that we can hardly keep up. But I would say that when I was a teenager, I mean, the colleges, like, you know, especially in Berkeley, you know, and all those crazy, really, really far-left colleges, were bastions of free speech. We can say anything we want, debate any controversial idea, da-da-da-da, you know, all that. And now these safe zones and all that kind of stuff that they set up, and that was the first chip in the iceberg. And now, all of a sudden, the whole thing is broken off, and you are not even allowed. You might hurt someone's feelings, and we've gone from a reason-based culture to almost a completely emotions-based culture. And I don't know. I have never in my life been so concerned, because at the heart of the American experience is the free expression of ideas. And I don't like these transgender people who come and say, look at me, you got to accept me or whatever. But at the end of the day, I would die to defend their right to say those things. But that's no longer true for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, so many.
And there's a difference between disagreeing with what they have to say and loving them as a child of God. We are Christian and we love everyone, but at the same time, we're allowed to disagree. But we should be able to say, I disagree with you. I don't like what you say. But as you just said, I'll defend your right to say it. Even members of the ACLU are coming out now and saying this is scary, which I thought was very encouraging. They're saying we're going down a very, very dangerous path here, and they disagree with it. And the American Civil Liberties Union, two very prominent people. More with Monsignor Pope, the second installation of his blog regarding what we're dealing with. Five more hard truths we've come to see with 2020 vision. You can find this blog at the Register. More with Monsignor when we come back on a Wednesday.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I want to welcome you, if you're not familiar, with the wonderful world of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. What will America become if it makes it impossible for the Holy Spirit to work here because of untruth and self-indulgence and paganism? This is not just a nice discussion of the gifts of the Holy Spirit, because I'm going to discuss what happens when people make it impossible to be prudent, just, or honest, or brave, or courageous, or reverent. When people make that impossible, what a terrible thing they do not only to themselves, but to our society.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What do we mean by intercessory prayer? The Catholic Catechism defines intercessory prayer as asking on behalf of another. It is a prayer attuned to God's mercy. It is a prayer of petition that leads us to pray as Jesus did. Jesus is the one intercessor with the Father on behalf of all mankind, especially sinners, because, says the Catechism, Jesus is able for all time to save the souls who draw near to God through him. Jesus lives to make intercession for such souls. When one prays intercessory prayer, he or she is looking out not just for one's own interest, but for the interest of others, even for one's enemies. The intercession of Christians recognizes no boundaries, says the Catechism. Prayers are extended for all men, for kings or for persecutors, and even for the salvation of those who reject the gospel. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Thanks so much. You're listening to Catholic Connection on a Wednesday, so appreciate your listenership here at EWTN. We're speaking with our friend, Monsignor Charles Pope. He has another terrific article on National Catholic Register. He's currently a dean and pastor in the Archdiocese of D.C., where he served on the Priest Council, the College of Consultors, and the Priest Personal Board, along with publishing a daily blog at the Archdiocese of Washington website. He's written in a number of pastoral journals and conducted numerous retreats for priests and lay faithful, and also just recently conducted a retreat for some of our bishops in the Midwest. Now, the second piece, Monsignor, that you have posted, which is up today, is talking about how there may have been overreach in the church in terms of reacting to COVID. Your thoughts. Share with us what you expressed in this piece.
Yeah, first of all, you know, I was amazed, and I'm not going to, you know, name all the dioceses, but a good number of dioceses suspended all public masses when even as many as 250 could still be gathered. You know, the civil authorities said that 250 could be gathered. Why did we rush to, there was almost an eagerness to comply, or shall we say so it almost sounds to me like the lawyers are talking more than the shepherds. And my God, if somebody gets sick and we get sued, we're finished. So we completely suspended all public masses. Now, there came a moment where we came to the lowest point of all in D.C. here, where we could still have 10 people at a meeting. Well, then I'll have 10 people at Mass. Come on. Why are you suspending, completely shutting down? And the worst examples of this were, you know, bishops who told priests to lock their churches and not to hear confessions or give communion under any circumstance. That was the most extreme. Most bishops, thankfully, including my own, were not that extreme. I kept my church open. I was hearing confessions. We had adoration. I did celebrate Mass because I have a community of 25 sisters, plus I had 3 seminarians, and I continued to celebrate Masses. And some of the lay people occasionally snuck in. Not all the sisters would come at one time, but we did the very best we could to stay within the civil laws and to creatively try to provide sacraments. So I think the first thing was we were in a big rush, you know, to...
Mm-hmm.
But there's more to it, but you go ahead and ask me a follow-up.
Well, I was just wondering why it's interesting, because even now there are still so many restrictions and many of the bishops going to court over this when, as you said, casinos are open, big box stores are open, other places are open, a grocery store is essential, but still they don't consider faith to be essential, unfortunately. And I am glad to see that the bishop in Brooklyn took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and especially since there haven't been, they talk about follow the science, but there's no science to show that anything's been connected to the churches, and yet they still limit it in so many ways. This is just, to me, an overreach, and I believe that not all, but some of these politicians are using this as like a testing to see how much we'll put up with. My concern is, where are we as an American people and as a church in the United States? Do we have it within us to respectfully and nonviolently push back against this?
Well, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's God calling. Wants to join in on the conversation. Hopefully he isn't on it anyway. Go ahead.
I've turned off my ringer. I think as a church, we are still very cowardly, collectively speaking. But look at that Bishop of Brooklyn. And look at the bishops of Minnesota when they went up against their governor. We won. And I think that there are going to be small pictures of heroism where we stand up. And then I pray and hope that other bishops and dioceses and so on will say, look, you are overreaching. There's no real evidence, because we're very careful. People don't just come into church. They come into church wearing masks and distancing, and we use alcohol to purify our fingers between communicants and so on. We do a lot of things. We spray down the pews. We keep our church. Now, look, you know, maybe even that's overreach, but at the end of the day, I will comply with any ordinary norm like that just so I can get people communion.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one thing is heroism. Secondly, we have lost, and I think our people have lost, the idea that sacraments are essential. A horrifying, you know, Jesus says, if you don't eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you. And if you're in mortal sin, you're in trouble. You need confession.
Yeah.
We've lost this, you see. So it's all become, it's just a ritual. You know, the governor of Virginia said, well, you know, what's the big deal? You can watch your dumb little church service online.
It's the same thing. Yeah, that's what he said. It's the same. No, it's not.
No.
when you have a sacramental church, I do see bright spots here and there, though. As you said, for example, my husband, Deacon Dominic, there are some people, since we've had Mass and it's going really well, there are some people, though, who don't feel comfortable coming inside, but they want to receive Jesus. So what they do is they literally drive up in the parking lot and they watch the Mass online. And then they will come out and they will give them communion in the car. And Dominic says Dominic says there's this one woman that gets so excited every time she sees him walking to the car with Jesus. Her face lights up. And last week when he brought communion to her, she broke out into applause.
Amen.
Because she was so excited to see Jesus. So I think, to me, that's encouraging that people. And then there was a study that came out from Gallup that was interesting, that the only people that are doing well mentally, that saw an increase in their mental health situation, are those who are attending religious services. Now, it didn't indicate whether they were Catholic or or non-denominational, but I thought that is good news because it shows that we know the connection between faith and mental health and also physical health as well as emotional health, right? All those things. But I think that's encouraging. So we need to keep encouraging one another. What else do you think we can do, Monsignor, to stand up against this attempt to basically wipe out God and differing opinion out there?
Well, I think, first of all, you're talking about that creativity. You know, even during the complete shutdowns, you know, I'll be honest with you, people said, I'm desperate, Father. I need communion. I gave them communion outside of Mass. The liturgists were discouraging this. Well, what's the difference between a liturgist and a terrorist? You can negotiate with a terrorist. You know, and so I said, you know, this is just a liturgical principle. So I gave a lot of people communion outside of Mass, even during the worst of the shutdown. But I think we have to, in the future, if something like this happens again, we have to simply say, look, you know, you come by, we'll, you know, at, you know, not we don't, what we want to avoid is bringing a big crowd together. All right, fine, got that. We can still give communion to small numbers. But beyond that, we have not preached our theology of suffering and death. This was a teachable moment, and we could have spoke to the world eloquently about the meaning of suffering and death, because part of the reason we're in this mess where people are so terrified about a virus that kills less than 1% of its victims, that because suffering and death have no meaning to people anymore. We've lost, our Christian culture is gone. We presume, well, people must know. No, they don't. That suffering is powerful. It produces glory for us. It gives us wisdom. It keeps us humble. And then even regarding death itself, if you're faithful, the day you die is the greatest day of your life. You know, I was lying there in the bed while I hear the music, but, I went to St. Paul. He said, to die is gain.
Monsignor, thank you so much. When's your next installment on this series?
It's just up today?
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll check it out. ncregister.com, Monsignor Charles Pope, and we'll be right back. We go to Rome with Joan Lewis. Stay strong, Monsignor. We need you. God, talk to you soon. We'll be right back.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. Feeding 5,000 from a boy's 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, as recorded in John chapter 6, is quite a miracle. Yet the next day, Jesus downplays it in verse 27. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. Likewise, God's provision of manna to the Israelites in the desert was also a great miracle, yet Jesus similarly downplays it in verse 49. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. Jesus is clearly stating that his Eucharist is greater than both of these amazing miracles, and the Catholic Church absolutely takes him at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Over the last 50 years, we've had some of the greatest popes since the Reformation era. So why are things such a mess in American Catholicism? How do we analyze and confront the attacks we're facing? How do we identify wolves in sheep's clothing? How do we re-evangelize the baptized? Dr. Ralph Martin makes sense of a church in crisis and shows pathways forward. He'll make sense of a disordered world. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and you'll find it in our online bookstore.
Call to Communion.
Through Edmonton Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Past the hour. Welcome back, Catholic Connection. It's a Wednesday. It means we go to Rome and speak to our very own Joan Lewis. I wonder, gosh, Joan, where do we begin? So much news. Always great to have you on the program.
I know.
Let's see. First of all, there was a story that broke earlier in the week, and there was a lot of concern thinking that this was another effort for the Vatican to push toward women priests. But that is not the case regarding the motu proprio that came out. Why don't we start there? Because there's a lot to cover this morning.
Well, I think you're right, because what we're talking about is that motu proprio of the Pope that literally it enshrines the institutions of lector and acolyte in the canon law. So lector, I think more people understand who and what a lector, you know, a reader, but the term is lector, does it, than they do understand acolyte. Another translation would be altar server, the person we associate with bringing, walking up with the candles at a liturgy, helping set the altar for the Mass. I was an acolyte, but I didn't know it in college because I prepared Mass. I laid out all the vestments and prepared the altar the night before Mass in the chapel in the hall that I lived in as a sophomore. And I was near the chapel and wanted to do that, and I guess what I did was called acolyte. And that was in the 60s, so that was even, it was before Vatican Council II. And I think what the Pope was doing was he enshrined these lector and acolyte ministries into canon law by making them, opening them up to women. And the thing is, women, I'm one of them, we have been lectors in our parishes for years, for decades, mm-hmm. after Vatican Council II. It's just that it wasn't that it was illegal, it's just that it was never enshrined verbally, written mm-hmm. into canon law, and now it is. And you're right, this has nothing to do, I've been talking obviously to people here at the Vatican, this has nothing to do with ordained ministries. There are three, deacon, priest, and bishop. So being an acolyte, being an altar server, obviously being a lector, these are not ordained ministries. The word that the document uses is institution. These are ministries that were instituted to help the church grow in many, many ways. And interestingly enough, one of the people I talked to this morning told me that the word acolyte means to follow God. And he said, isn't that precisely our ministry in life, to our vocation in life is to follow God. So I think the document is very, very clear. And on my website, I put the fact that I was delighted by this because, of course, I've been a lector for years. I have was a reader for John Paul several times in St. Peter's. I've been a lector for Pope Francis during his morning Mass in the chapel of the Santa Marta residence and so forth and so on. But on my January 11th blog, I also put five of the points that were made by a Monsignor Lameri. He's at the Pontifical Lateran University in Rome, and he's an ordinary of liturgy there, and he explains how all of this is in continuity, and it really goes back to 72, where in the new canon, the one word was removed, canon number 230, paragraph 1 of canon law. The initial word was viri, V-I-R-I, which means male persons. And that was taken out and replaced with lay people who have the age and skills determined by the Episcopal Conference can be permanently employed for the ministries of readers and acolytes. And St. John Paul, of course, had already specified that among functions of the laity, both men and women, were that of reader, lector, and service at the altar. That was how he phrased it in 1992. So we have a very harmonious development of this, what has come out just days ago from the Holy Father, this discipline, you know, regarding these two ministries. But the important thing is that Pope Francis here, Teresa, stressed that the word ministries was used and the term ordination is not used, but institution. So you have institution of the ministry of lector, institution of the ministry, but you have nothing to do with ordination. And that was quite clear in the document. There are codes in canon law on the fact that ordination, be it deacon, priest, or bishop, is open strictly to males, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a whole bunch of history in this. The Pope's motu proprio was very, very clear in everything. And it's just the Pope, as I say, enshrining into writing something that has been done for decades anyway. So
now, there's been a lot of criticism out there and a lot of questions in terms of this is just another move toward the female priesthood, which cannot happen.
Yeah,
I mean, the people have to understand that. They, you know, even if the Pope thinks that, we don't know what he thinks, and only God knows what he's thinking, what's on his heart. But that can't happen because it goes against, you know, church teaching. And he has affirmed, affirmed the letters of both Pope Paul VI and John Paul II repeatedly.
Exactly. And he's been very clear on this. There are papal documents on ordination reserved solely to men. There's canon law. It's all over the place. So people may want this, and they may say they don't understand what Pope Francis is doing with this motu proprio. But if they wanted to understand, it is out there. It's well written. It is not difficult to understand. Again, on my website, I gave not the whole thing. If people don't have that kind of time, if they come to you and me, it's probably for some matters for a simpler explanation of something. But it's easy to understand. It is very, very clear. If you want women to be ordained, this is not part of your plan, nor is it part of the church's plan for women to be ordained. It's just so clear. It just clarifies and enshrines these ministries into canon law for women.
So next thing, we've got some new guidelines. We have a lot to cover this morning. It's already 46 minutes past the hour with Joan Lewis reporting from Rome. Some new guidelines for Lent during COVID. That's another big story. Ash Wednesday specifically.
Yeah. But also, could I say something, because it's the news of the day here, relating to COVID, the Vatican started its vaccination
program. Oh, yes, you mentioned that in your last email,
today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the Paul VI hall, and I, on my our Twitter account and my Facebook page, and they'll soon be in my blog, I posted two pictures sent to us by the Vatican Press Office of the area. The atrium of the Paul VI hall is quite large, as you and any of our listeners who've been there know, and it's much, much larger than any space that we could possibly have in the Vatican's medical center, because that center is very, very small. And if you don't want a lot of people together, you don't want to put them in the medical center. So they showed a typical area where the person would go and be shielded, and there's a bed. And then they had a picture of the refrigerator, because the Vatican bought a refrigerator for the Pfizer vaccine, which has to be stored at an extraordinarily low temperature. So the Vatican had to buy a refrigerator for that. So word from not from the Vatican, but from an Argentinian paper called La Nación, and apparently America Magazine reports that the Pope was vaccinated today. So the Holy See Press Office has not confirmed that. I think they're waiting to talk to the people at La Nación to find out who they talk to in the Vatican. So, but I think we can safely presume that the Holy Father was the first or among the first to be vaccinated. So, but to go back to the COVID now and not vaccination, but Ash Wednesday, how ashes are distributed, I know, varies around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in the U.S., we always get the some of the celebrant with the ashes on it, making a sign across on our forehead and saying the words that, remember you are dust, and to dust you shall return.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And however, in Italy, I remember the first time I ever, you know, was here on an Ash Wednesday, the ashes, you may go up and bow your head, but the ashes are put on your head, on your hair. So if you have a lot of hair and it's long, or you're a gentleman and balding, you get the ashes on the top of your head. So that's basically what the new instructions say. The priest will say this prayer only once, not to each person as they come up to him. He will say the prayer for everybody, clean his hands, put on a face mask, and distribute the ashes to those who come, or, depending on the setting, if it's appropriate, says this norm, He will go to those standing in their places, and he will sprinkle them on the head of each one without saying anything. So the priest does not have to speak, even if he has a mask on, and he also there will be no touching or interacting in the sense of the hands of the priest, you know, making a sign on your forehead. Mm-hmm.
Of course, this could be adjusted. As you said, people do it differently. Churches, the different bishops may choose to do it differently, but this is what they are suggesting from the Vatican, correct?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, it doesn't say mandated. I think they probably hope that, you know, Teresa, how many times did we in the earlier months talk about churches being closed and then being opened and only 10 people could go into a church for 1,200 seats and stuff.
Right.
I think this is just, it's a very reasonable decree or item, if you really want to, from the Congregation for Divine Worship, in that let's keep churches safe. Let's mm-hmm. not give anyone an excuse to say, oh my gosh, Ash Wednesday. 2 million Catholics in New York went into church and COVID rose. So they're just saying this is the way to be safe. This is the way to do it. They'll probably still have social distancing, obviously, mm-hmm. in the church. It doesn't even talk about that.
No, it sounds very reasonable. You're still able to receive the ashes.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think that is a good direction. And also, the Holy Father did not this last weekend baptize children. And that's such a beautiful thing that always happens. That was sad, though.
I know.
Yeah, in the Sistine Chapel.
You don't even have to have little kids in your family. You probably know somebody who's had a baby or has a baby in their life. And it's just such fun to see the Holy Father and watch the babies and who's good and who cries and who squirms and whatever. But the setting is so beautiful.
So beautiful, and the Sistine Chapel there. Oh,
yeah.
Gorgeous.
And
gorgeous.
Then the children were all going to be, they're all children. They have been for quite a few years now. They've been children of Vatican employees because, oh my gosh, Teresa, for years, people knew a baby had to be 3 months old. You couldn't come in at 9 months or anything else. I think they had to be three or under. And but people were writing in from all over the world, and their mother's hairdresser's niece, you know, just had a baby, and their Catholic is the Pope, and you know, could he baptize them? So it just got too difficult to answer.
I can imagine
the requests that came in. Plus, which if you set up a rule, it's got to be children of Vatican employees. People are still going to try and write.
Right.
You know, Holy Father, can you make an exception? But as long as the rule is there, you know, this is the red light. Just stop for it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I wonder, hopefully they'll be able to resume that next year because it is such a beautiful, beautiful practice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, all the changes and not that this has to do with COVID, but I wrote you that on Monday, Cardinal Pell said Mass in the Chapel of the Choir in St. Peter's for all of us at EWTN on Monday morning. And so we were all kind of gathered around talking to him afterwards. And as we walked out into the square, we could see they were taking down the tree. And I'm going to post a picture today. I've got men in the cherry picker taking the star off the top of the tree. So the tree and the nativity scene were to come down, and because they had been listed as coming down after the Feast of the Baptism. And I thought, to be honest, my dear, that they'd leave them up a week or 10 days more simply because for quite a number of days and night, of course, the St. Peter's Square was closed. So people, you could see the tree from a distance, but you couldn't get up to see the nativity scene.
We're out of time, sweetheart. Thank you so much. Look forward to catching up again next week. All the latest news from Roma, the Eternal City, and our very own Joan's Rome. Check out her great blog. We'll be right back to let you know what's coming up on a Thursday morning edition of this very program right here on EWTN. Stay tuned.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at charitymobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams. Contemplate the universe with me.
He gives showers of rain to all people.
Oceans provide 97% of Earth's water. Freshwater rivers wash mineral residue, toxins, and many of the 10 billion species of bacteria and viruses into the ocean. When the seawater evaporates, it leaves behind mineral salt, raising the sea's salinity. Then, two benevolent miracles occur. First, as a purifier, the ocean's salt kills off most of the bacteria and viruses. Second, as seawater evaporates, left behind are the much larger salt and disease-causing molecules, producing pure water vapor that later will condense and create a purified freshwater rainfall. And how does nature know how to do all that? We have no idea. But God does, and one day you will too. At AveMariaRadio.net, under Resources, explore the universe with me. I'm Dr. Stan Williams.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual fund. You can learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Okay, now I'm getting hungry. Joan Lewis and I talking during the break just now about what she made for a recent dinner party. Sound like a fantastic menu. Anyway, speaking of the menu of the radio show, coming up tomorrow, we'll be checking in with Jeannie Mancini from the March for Life. What are the details? What's happening? How will this be done differently this year because of COVID? You don't want to miss that. Coming up tomorrow on a Thursday. Have a great Wednesday. God bless you, and we'll see you tomorrow. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.